Hello and welcome to HW Editorial with me, Sujit Nair. Here you can listen to my views, my analysis. Follow this podcast to stay updated. At HW News, we have been delivering news that matters to you. Our goal is to present you with information that stimulates conversations around topic of larger public importance that often gets lost in primetime shows.
Namaskar. Welcome to another episode of Dialogue. We saw the budget day before yesterday, and honestly, I was expecting a lot, though it was interim budget, I understand. Yeah, I was expecting a lot in terms of growth, in terms of employment, in terms of investment in the rural India. I was expecting a lot. I didn't find much in the budget. Well, I wanted to get a better perspective. So, today's dialogue, I thought, who better to have than Dr. Arun Kumar. So, let's talk to Dr. Arun Kumar, figure out what he felt about the budget. What is his opinion about the budget and what was he expecting from this budget? Let's get right into the show. The article that you wrote for The Wire, you say that Union Budget 2024 has elections and not Ram Rajya in sight. Sir, why do you say that?
You know, Ram Rajya implies transparency, justice, you know, a sort of responsibility towards society. The budget, you know, doesn't seem to indicate these things. For instance, the data on which that budget is based is not quite accurate. Then the problems that the people face, for instance, unemployment, and especially women's unemployment, youth unemployment, you know, the problem that agriculture faces, those have not been addressed. The Prime Minister himself has identified that he believes in four castes, and these castes are poverty, the poor people, the farmers, the youth, and the women. So this budget should have indicated that we are going to do something special for these four. And there are enough resources in a budget to be able to provide that. Because what happened last year, what is the current year, on the basis of which the budget is made, the major schemes which would have benefited, say, agriculture, they have not been, the money has not been spent. As came out earlier, that agriculture ministry returned 1 lakh crore over the last many years, which it did not spend. So if you have a priority for these four castes, then you must increase expenditures. Now, unemployment is one of the biggest problems that is confronting the economy, because if there's unemployment, then that is associated with poverty. So if you have to reduce poverty, you have to increase employment generation. If you have to benefit the youth, you have to increase employment. If you have to benefit the women, you have to increase employment for them. So employment should have been a big focus of the budget. Last year as well as this coming year. Now, what we find is that those areas which are employment generating, those are labor intensive areas, that is where actually expenditures were less, and what is being allotted in the coming year, that will be not up to what should be done. So that's why I'm saying that it is not the beginning of a Ram Rajya or of the Maryada Purushottam. Maryada Purushottam meant that the person would automatically do what is right for society, would keep things very fair and very frank and just. That is not what the budget is providing for. It is hiding a lot of things. It is, you know, saying many things in the party of the speech. The finance minister has said that we are doing this for, you know, our people. But that, there it is short. Secondly, it's saying that by 2030, we'll become $7 trillion. By 2047, we'll become $30 trillion. And the promise of a developed economy. But in real terms, that would require a 9.5% rate of growth to become 7 trillion by 2030. And it would require 10.5% rate of growth to reach $30 trillion economy by 2047. Now, when in the last 10 years, on an average, we have grown at about 6%, suddenly to say we'll grow at 9.5% or 10.5% is a very tall order. And suppose you were to say that, okay, let's try and do that, then how would you do that? To do that, you'd have to generate demand in the economy. The problem that the economy is facing is demand. And that's why the rate of growth has been low. That's why the unemployment situation is high. So how do you generate greater demand? For that, you have to give purchasing power at the bottom of the pyramid. So the 94% in the unorganized sector, if they begin to have more money in hand because they're getting better employment, then there'd be demand and then the industry will grow, economy will grow. You know, so therefore, what we need to see is whether the budget is doing that. So the promise of a developed economy, promise of becoming well-off by 2030, all those depend on creating more employment and giving more work to the youth and to the women. And that is not visible in the budget. So that's why I'm saying it's not a budget which will promote Ram Rajya. The Prime Minister talked about Ram Rajya on 22nd. So we thought that this budget would try and promote Ram Rajya. But it's the opposite of what Ram Rajya should be.
Sir, this concept of 6% and 10.5%, this concept of growth, sir, is this an inclusive growth? Is this include the unorganized sector? Does it include the informal economy? Or are we just talking about formal economy?
So, you know, at the moment, what we are doing is only talking about the formal economy. But if we are to grow at 9.5% or 10.5%, it will have to be inclusive. The 94% who are in the unorganized sector, they have to be incorporated in it, and then only will the growth rate go up to 9.5% or 10.5%. So that's why I'm arguing that the budget as it has been presented is not going to be inclusive, because all the areas which are labor intensive, they are not seeing any great focus, whereas the capital intensive areas are seeing a greater focus. So the government is now announcing all kinds of schemes. Like last year, it had announced 10 lakh crores. Now it's announcing 11.1 lakh crore, rather 11.11 lakh crore for capital investment. And most of that is going into capital intensive areas, whether it be the railway freight corridor, or whether it be the railways, or it be the highways, or it be, you know, power sector and so on. So these are infrastructure which is needed. But more than that, we can moderate that and try and create rural infrastructure, you know, which will be small projects. In these big projects, you know, big companies like L&T and so on will get, jobs, contracts, and they will employ very capital intensive techniques, big bulldozers, big cranes, etc. So the direct employment generation will be very small in all these areas. So where would the employment generation be if we had increased rural employment guarantee scheme, rural development schemes and things like that? So that emphasis is not visible.
I want to talk to you about a rural employment scheme. I want to talk to you about rural development. Then we will come to the urban development and the demand part of it. Sir, rural development, right from 2014, have we seen any significant schemes, significant program that was focused on rural development in terms of both economy and employment?
So certainly, I mean, the government has Swachhata Abhiyan, housing schemes and things like that. So those are there, but you have to increase the expenditures on that. And then, you know, which are the other employment generating areas? Education, health, and then, you know, say small irrigation, telecom, and things like that. Those are lacking, and that's why the rural infrastructure is much weaker than the urban infrastructure. And that's why the job creation in the rural areas is very low. And that's why a large number of people migrate from rural areas to urban areas. Now, urbanization is very expensive. To give an example, if you want to open a school in an urban area like Delhi, you need 15, 20 crores of rupees at least, you know. Whereas in a village, you can open in a 50 lakhs. So in the allocation for one school in an urban area, you can open maybe 20 schools in the rural areas. So therefore, you know, if you depend on rural development, then the cost of the development will also come down, and that will provide employment. And therefore, your people will not be rushing to urban areas. And the urban areas, as they get more and more, as they get bigger and bigger, there's more and more congestion, more people are living in slums, more environmental pollution, more traffic jams. And therefore, you need bigger roads, you need metros and so on, which are very expensive. you know, a metro in Delhi overhead costs 100 crores per kilometer, underground costs 300 kilometers per kilometer. Now, in that much amount of money, you can, you know, make all the roads that you need in a village, you know, and make them well. So, in other words, you know, we need to have a development from below, which is what Gandhi proposed, that if we develop the, you know, villages, the 7 lakh villages in India, then, you know, you'll have employment generation, you'll have much better living conditions and so on, and people will not be migrating to cities and creating, a huge investment in urban area that is required.
I'm not just talking about this government, but over the years, over the decades, sir, isn't there a difference in the way we view our economy? See, whenever we talk about rural economy, we talk about subsidies, we talk about beneficiaries, we talk about labharthis, as we call it. And whenever we come to talk about urban economy, we talk about investments, we talk about development, we talk about research and development, and so on and so forth. So, aren't we viewing these two economies differently, sir?
So, you know, our focus of policymakers has been urban. Because we believe that if we develop the urban areas, that is the way to industrialize, that's the way to develop. You know? But that's a model of what is called top-down model, which is what we have adopted since the 1950s when the development process started. We thought that, you know, in the standard economic way, that if the developed sector keeps expanding, then it'll absorb the backward sector, and the backward sector would also slowly disappear, and everybody would be a part of the developed sector. But that was a model of development of Europe of 1820, 1813, 1840, when the gap in the technology between the rural and urban areas was not very big. And also the European countries had, you know, the colonies, America and so on, where they could send their surplus labor. Now, in India, that has not happened because the gap between the advanced sector and the backward sector is very large. The advanced sectors do not generate much employment. And that's why you still have, after 75 years of development, only 6% of the workforce is in the organized sector, and 94% remains entrenched in the unorganized areas. And that is a large part of that is in the rural areas. It's also in the slums and so on of the big cities also. But the point is that this top-down approach that we have adopted, that has caused enormous differentiation, that has caused problems, and that is what needs to be tackled. So when you have poverty in the rural areas, then you have to help them through subsidies and so on. If we had done development from below, then we would not have had to do this subsidization, etc. So subsidies are required when the incomes are inadequate. So if we generated enough incomes in the rural areas, in agriculture, in the micro sectors, then we would not have had to subsidize. Now we see, for instance, during the pandemic, that large number of people who had migrated from rural to urban areas, they had to migrate back. Why? Because they do not have savings. So even though they come for a better life in the urban areas, but they hardly have savings. So the lot of the poor people, whether in the rural areas or in the urban areas, remains very poor, because our focus is on the business community. It is focused on the urban areas for the well-off segments and on industrialization, not on agriculture.
Sir, when you're talking about development, there has to be a sustainable model of development. What really happens in urban India is urban India generate revenue. So investing in urban India makes sense. In rural India, the problem is that there is no sustainable development model. There is nothing done for agrarian economy as far as Indian government is concerned. And again, I'm not really talking about Modi. I'm talking about the last six governments in the past. There is no much actual R&D or actual technology that has been used in agrarian economy. Sir, what are we doing to develop our farms, our farm produce, and our farm as business?
So you have asked many questions all rolled into one. When we think of sustainable development, that is different from just development. You know, sustainable development implies that the carrying capacity of the environment, that is taken into account, and therefore you do not have a deteriorating environment. When we talk of development, it could be a bottom-up approach, it could be a top-down approach. What has happened is that right from the time of independence, we have believed that we need to take the surplus out of agriculture and the rural areas to do industrialization in the urban areas. So that's why our policymakers, who largely come from urban areas and who are, you know, better off people, they have ignored the agriculture sector and they have ignored the rural areas. So most of the investment has gone into the urban areas, and that's why we now say that the revenues and resources are being generated in the urban areas. And that is because of the investment pattern that we followed since independence. If we'd followed a bottom-up approach, the situation would have been very different because the rural areas would have also developed, the poor would have also developed, they would have also generated resources. So as we know that 80% of all investment goes into the organized sector, which is largely in the urban areas. Only 20% is going into the unorganized sector. And in agriculture, only 5% is going. And that 5% is also going into mechanization, like more tractors, more harvester combines, more threshers, more potato digging machines, etc. So employment generation in rural areas is not taking place, and that's why poverty persists. So there are two things. One is this mechanization that's taking place in agriculture. The other is the extraction of the surplus out of agriculture to the urban areas to industrialize. So therefore, the rural areas remain poor. We need to balance that. You know, so in the urban areas, it's very expensive to do. And that's why there are large number of slums. 60% of the Bombay population lives in slums because they cannot afford the land, they cannot afford housing, and their incomes are too low. As the e-shram portal data suggests, that 30 crores are registered there, and 94% of them say they earn less than 10,000 rupees per month. So they and their families are literally at the poverty line. Okay. So if that many people don't have enough purchasing power, naturally the economy will suffer. And therefore, disparities are growing between the rich and the poor. And we can see the large number of billionaires in India at a very low per capita income. We are 137th in per capita income, but we are third largest in terms of billionaires. So that only shows the kind of inequality that we have in the economy. And that is because the policy, the policy paradigm that we have followed, that has been pro-rich, pro-well-off, and pro-industry, pro-urban. So that focus needs to change.
Are we too late to now follow the bottom-up approach, or can the economy still change? Can our thought process still change? Can our policies still change?
No, it's a question of politics. You know, who are the people who are governing? Who are the people who are dominant in policy making? If they are people who only support urbanization, as you know, very often it's said, we have to urbanize more. You know, the more you urbanize, the more the concentration of resources in the urban areas, and the worse the poor people in the rural areas and in the cities will find themselves, So it's a question of, focus. It's a question of understanding and who's deciding policy. If the farmers were deciding policy, if the rural areas were deciding policy, maybe it would be different. But the elite, the urban elite, and they are a part of all political parties today, they have focused on that. So the new economic policy since 1991, they're focused on creating more industry. So instead of creating more industry, you've created more services. So services sector is keeping on growing. Industrial sector has not grown as much as it should have grown. So it's because the kind of policy that we followed, which have led to this kind of a dichotomy between the urban and rural, agriculture, non-agriculture, between services and agriculture. So all these dichotomies are because of the development paradigm that we followed right from independence, and more so since 1991, and even more so since 2014. Because the model now is to create large agglomerates, like Tatas, Adanis, Ambanis, give them everything, make them like chaebols of South Korea. Now the chaebols of South Korea develop technology, but our conglomerates are not developing technology. They are growing by acquiring more and more assets, So on the one hand, you have this. On the other hand, you have large number of poor because the focus has not been on them. So you have 80 crore labhartis, you give them food, you give them, gas and various other things. So they are almost like, you're playing with their dignity because they depend on the dole that is being given. So instead, if you had given them work, if you had given them proper living conditions, then, they would have had dignity. And they would therefore be more incorporated in society.
Very valid point you raised, 80 crore labharti. Sir, what is the implication of having 80 crore labharthis in an economy like ours? What is the long-term implication of this?
The long-term implication is that these people will not be committed to society. Your policies will not succeed. And you will have to keep on giving them something. Because the way to get out is to create enough employment so that, they get jobs. They get an income in hand, and then you don't have to treat them as labharti. As labharti, they will get what the political parties are offering them. That may not be their need. So that's why, in spite of the labhartis and so on, the National Health and Family Survey shows that 30% women are malnourished, 30% children are malnourished, because they're not getting appropriate kind of food. if they had money of their own, maybe they would spend it in a better way. So therefore, you know, the commitment to society is lacking, the alienation of these people from society that's growing. And that's why, you know, we're not able to pursue policies that are good for the nation. The policy that would be good for the nation are that we must create jobs and we must give each person a living wage, not just a minimum wage. A living wage would imply that they should have enough for education, health, for nutrition, for housing, for clothing. And that's what we promised in the Constitution. In the Constitution, it's been promised that we will give a living wage to workers. Similarly for farmers, farmers must have better income. The last survey that was done, which showed 27 rupees per person per day as the farming income, that has to go up. For that, the MSP is required. For that, you know, proper implementation of the MSP system is required. So these are kind of things on which we should focus resources. What we do is we focus resources on creating railway freight corridors, highways, and things like that. Now, those things are needed by the big cities, because then you have to interconnect the cities, transport from one to the other. Whereas there was a local economy in every village which was born, then you would not need these big highways and the big railway freight corridor, etc. So in a sense, you know, we are in a vicious circle in which there's concentrated development in the urban areas, and then you have these corridors and so on, which are interconnecting them, and a lot of resources are going there, which means less resources for rural areas and for agriculture. You know, for instance, agriculture used to have extension services. So new technologies that were coming used to be spread to the rural areas, to the farmers. Now those extension services have come down because our public investment on agriculture, that has been falling since the 1980s. We have not thought it fit to actually do more, technological development and then spread it.
Before I get into the budget once again, I want to ask you a very specific question, sir. Sir, how important is MGNREGA to rural poor? And what happens if you throttle MGNREGA? What would be the effect?
So, you know, several crore families have registered under the Rural Employment Guarantee Scheme, wanting to get work, because it's inadequate work. Now, for under the Rural Employment Guarantee Scheme, you are supposed to provide 100 days of work for each family. Instead, as the RBI data shows, we've been only providing roughly around 50 days of work. So that's quite inadequate to support a family. And also the amount of wages that are paid under the Rural Employment Guarantee Scheme are very low. The Rural Employment Guarantee Scheme is very important because that gives employment to those people who don't have employment, who are looking for employment and not finding employment. So it is very important to keep the families going. But it is inadequate. It should be expanded. There should be not just 100 days of work, but maybe 200 days of work. And the wages should be double of what they are there. That is when you'll find that the demand from the rural areas will increase. Now, for that, you have to create proper work. And that is not a rocket science. What kind of work? We already know that there's a lack of infrastructure in the rural areas, whether it be roads, whether it be drinking water, whether it be school buildings, whether it be health facilities and so on. So Rural Employment Guarantee Scheme can help in building rural infrastructure in a proper way. What is done is at the last minute, you do some digging, earthwork and so on, which when the rains come, you get washed away. So the Rural Employment Guarantee Scheme gets a bad name. But the Rural Employment Guarantee Scheme has been on for now close to 17, 18 years. By now, it should have been well planned to say what kind of projects will get this money and how the permanent infrastructure would be built, how the job creation would be done. So Rural Employment Guarantee Scheme at the moment is very important, also because we are not generating enough jobs, especially in the rural areas. So at least it gives the families some kind of respite, but it should be expanded. There's no doubt about it.
But isn't it a fact that one is not very focused on rural and one is not very focused on rural on MGNREGA? Because there was no real planning done on MGNREGA. There is no real, MGNREGA was never taken seriously, to my mind at least, because I've been talking about it for a long, long time now. Most of my editorials, I speak about MGNREGA. But somewhere down the line, I find that MGNREGA was never taken seriously. It was never taken as a productive program. It was always taken as another labhar kind of a program where you are just giving money for whatever sake of it. Isn't that so, sir?
Yeah, you're right. And that is because our policymakers are all urban centric. they all believe that, you know, we have to industrialize and we have to urbanize. So there's always a talk that, you know, we have to move more people from rural to urban areas. But I think that's an incorrect policy. That policy will create further problems, because even though people may come to urban areas, but they'll be living in slums, they will not be able to afford housing. They'll be living in terrible conditions. It'll increase the congestion in the urban areas. So I think we have started on a wrong track, right from independence, where we have talked about development from above, industrialization and urbanization. That focus has to change of the policymakers.
My last question to you, sir, are you happy with the budget? I mean, a simple question. Are you happy with this budget? Did you expect the budget to be like the way it was? And if not, what were you expecting?
So this budget is with an eye to the election, because the budget says we have done this, this, this in the last 10 years, and that, you know, we will become a developed economy and so on. But as I said in the beginning, the data doesn't support what is being said. So in that sense, I'm not happy with the budget, because I'd expected that the critical problems of the economy, of unemployment, of low incomes in the rural areas, of women and youth, you know, all those problems would show some emphasis, because the Prime Minister promised Ram Rajya. Now, Ram Rajya is all about justice and about, you know, doing the right thing by the people. And the right thing by people is to generate employment so that people's lot improves and their destitution goes down. Now, that is not being done. And that's why I'm not very happy with the budget, even though it's an interim budget. But the greater emphasis on education, on health, on employment generation, on rural development, that could have been done. That doesn't require a policy change. It simply means we have to take resources from somewhere and put it into these. So instead of developing all the capital intensive areas, which will help the big business, we should have reduced the budget there and put the money into the capital expenditure on the rural development part. You know, so without reducing capital expenditure, you should have reoriented the you know, priorities, and therefore that would have given more funds to the areas that really matter as far as the unorganized sector is concerned. Similarly, for the micro sector, special provision should have been done. Reform of GST could have been announced, that in the GST Council, GST reform would be done, so that the disadvantage of the unorganized sector would go down. So some of these things could have been announced, because that is not prevented by the fact that it's an interim budget. That would have shown that we really mean Ram Rajya. You know, the Ram temple coming up has aroused big hopes that the country be more just and we be more honest. But I think we are not being more just or more honest.
Sir, thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time. It was always a pleasure and enlightening to talk to you, sir. Thank you.
Stay ahead with our Cutting Edge News app. Instantly access the latest shorts in just 1 minute and breaking news in just 50 words. Download now for a smarter, faster news experience.
If you like this episode, please rate us with 5 stars right now. HW News Podcast are available on BingePods and all other audio platforms. Also, don't miss to check out our news reports from the house of HW News Podcast. We are sure you will love it too.